We don't normally do this, but I just wanted to say welcome to November. And while many of you won't love November the way I do, because, well, quite frankly, based on where you live in the world, according to stats, you don't celebrate Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is my favorite time of the year. It's my favorite holiday because I get to spend time with my loved ones and the people I care about the most. And even if you can't celebrate, or even if you don't celebrate it, you can celebrate Movember. Movember stands for Tackling Prostate Cancer, Testicular Cancer, Men's Mental Health, and Suicide Prevention. And we all have a male in our lives or a man in our lives that we love and want to be around for even longer. So do what you can to help raise awareness and support Movember. The Ugly Inside has done this for the past couple of years. You can actually help them support it by going to mobro.co/theuglyinside. The link is in the show notes. And by the way, I am growing a mustache for Movember. I am going to ruin my family pictures. So hopefully you don't have to. All right. So head over to mobro.co/theuglyinside and help support. All right. Now let's get to the show. Before we get started with this week's show, just a quick announcement. Yellow Card has partnered with Away Days Football, which makes original and high-quality football-inspired clothing for the casual looking for something to wear to matches. Use the code YELLOWCARD at checkout to get 15% off your entire order at awaydaysfootball.com. And on a personal note, if you haven't tried the mystery kit yet, you should. You won't be disappointed. So go to awaydaysfootball.com, use checkout code YELLOWCARD, and get 15% off your entire order. All right. Thanks for listening. And now here's the show.
You're listening to the Southampton Delivery Podcast, a podcast dedicated to the Southampton Football Club and all of the SFC fans.
If you want to have guarantees, you have to buy a washing machine. Match, either we win or we learn, and today we learned.
Abdacha, Austin, Sota Gizabi.
It's infield to Mane, 25 yards out. Lovely ball for Pella, onside, 1-0. Buffal shot, oh my word!
Unbelievable, he ran around the pitch like Bambi on ice. It was very, very embarrassing to watch.
And now, your host, Matt Markstone.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Southampton Delivery Podcast, a podcast and newsletter dedicated to the Southampton Football Club and all of the SFC fans, and available right here on southamptondelivery.com. My name is Matt Markstone. I am the host of the show. No matter where you are, no matter how you may be listening, whether this is your first time or you've been here before, thanks for making the show part of your day. I hope that you enjoy it. And thanks for joining us for episode 150 of the show. It means so much to me that so many of you have been here for so long. And it means just as much to me that so many of you are now joining the show and finding the show for the first time. So thank you to all of you. It wouldn't be possible without you and the guests. And I'll talk a little bit about that with Rob Maddox, who joins me this week. You can find him on Twitter at James Lord Prowse or on Instagram at Rob Maddox _. But I don't want to. Episode 150 is great. It is a bit of a milestone. It feels good, but it's not taking center stage this week. There are other people doing other big things that deserve to be mentioned, and none more so than Saints FC Fan of Chicago, who joined Patreon this week to become the newest Patreon member. So thank you for that. You and the rest of the $5 a month patrons, be on the lookout for a new episode coming to you exclusively before our match against Watford. So thank you so much for that. I do really do appreciate it. And just two quick things before we get into the interview with Rob Maddox. Congratulations to the guys over at the In That Number podcast for hitting episode 50. And the show has evolved so much from day one to now. So if you don't know, Ray and Kevin do a great job of putting together a podcast each and every week dedicated to Saints, just like this one, just like the Total Saints podcast, just like the Saints FC podcast. It's one more podcast that we have. And it means a lot, I think, to the fans and everybody else. There is a little bit of a community between the podcasters that is nice, but the coverage of the team, I think, is important. And now more so than ever, because we're losing Adam Leach. And Adam wrote his final verdict for the Southern Daily Echo. He covered his final match for the Southern Daily Echo. And the verdict is often the first thing I look for when I get up on a Monday morning. And I'm a little bit sad now that I will not have that from Adam anymore. And I think, as I wrote about in the newsletter last Friday, I think it's vitally important that we continue to have somebody to cover the team each and every week that has that access that the Echo has, because I think that now more so than ever, it is very, very kind of important that we hold the team accountable, we hold the club accountable for what we see and what's going on, both on and off the pitch. So thank you, Adam, for your dedication over the last 18 years, and best of luck to you. And, you know, I guess now we'll keep going forward. And this is the Thanksgiving season. I am very, very thankful to you for listening and supporting the show. It means a ton. Although in the United States and elsewhere around the world, this Friday is the biggest shopping day of the year for many people. But I'll just say this. Look at our record in the transfer window. You can't just expect to spend a lot of money and get something that you really want that does the job for you. So use that as a guide, I guess, as you go out and you know, spend your hard-earned money. And we'll talk to Rob a little bit about that as well, because he works in retail. So let's get into the rest of the episode, and I will talk to you on the other side. Thanks again for listening to episode 150 of the show. I really do appreciate it. We'd like to welcome back to the Southampton Delivery Podcast, Rob Maddox. You can find him on Twitter at James Lord Prowse or on Instagram at Rob Maddox _. Rob, we're talking just a few hours after the close of the Arsenal, or the final whistle, I should say, of the Arsenal match. A 2-2 draw, and I'll say a disappointing 2-2 draw, I think, based on the way that you and I feel right now. But yeah, we're recording now because you got to go into work tomorrow, because retail at Currys in this time of year, you got to be there.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's stupidly busy. I mean, do me a favor, everyone, if you're listening, just go buy online instead of coming to store. Please, you'll save me so much. But yeah, it feels, I mean, at this point, the game feels more like a defeat than a win. But yeah, Matt, I just like to congratulate you on, you know, your 150th episode. That's something to be proud of. Something to be very proud of, and I think the whole community thanks you for that.
Oh, well, I appreciate that very much. It's been It hasn't been a solo effort, even though I'm the only one, you know, officially doing the show, because without guests like you and everybody else, this would be the, I don't think I would do it if it was just me. If it was just me talking into a microphone, that's not yeah. Why I do this, you know? So this is, it means a lot that I haven't had 150 people on here, but I've had a lot of, well over 100 people join the show, and to have people contribute and be able to talk about the team. And that's really what it's about. So thank you. I appreciate that. And thanks everybody for listening.
Thank you.
And I was telling you beforehand, I think in 150 episodes, I think it's the first time I've ever double booked the show. I forgot to write down, I was supposed to have Tom on here, and I feel really bad. So Tom, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Tom.
It's not the way I wanted to wake up this morning, but it's all right. we'll get Tom on soon. So, anyway, we have a couple of things to talk about. Aside from the match, there's also, you know, rumors and links and everything else about selling the club or not selling the club. I do also want to talk a little bit about Adam Leach leaving the Southern Daily Echo and what that means, I think, for our coverage of the team. But for you coming back from the international break, what were your expectations of the club? This is the second time we've gotten a draw, I think, coming back from the break. I can't remember what happened the first time we came back, but I know we got a draw against Wolves, I think, last time. So, what were you expecting the team to show up like? And was that lineup, I guess, what you wanted to have happen?
I mean, from looking at the lineup, I don't think it was what anyone expected. Some people had it down as a 4-4-2, some people had it down as a 4-3-3. I was excited to see Obafemi start, and I thought he played absolutely out of his skin, but we'll get on to that later. In terms of coming back from the international break, obviously, you're going to see with teams that they look a lot more fresher, that they've worked on stuff. And I think we needed the break to just kind of reset. Because I was at the Everton match, and the first half, that was the worst first half of football I've ever seen. That is the worst first half of football I've seen in St Mary's, which is saying something in recent form. But I mean, we go into away matches with a lot less pressure. I mean, I was reading today, if you take out home points and home results, we're eighth in the league for if only away matches counted. But you can't really expect much going into this, because we are the worst defense in the league. We've conceded 23 goals in 7 games, and we've lost 6 of those games. It's ridiculous. it's a hard time, but I think the international break came at a good time for Ralph just to sit down, take a breather, and work with what he's got. You could obviously see today we looked a lot fresher. We were pressing from the start, which is obviously something that he hopes, you know, we can work into defending from the front. Because we kind of need to defend from the front. I mean, our defense is so poor. But yeah, I mean, I think some people were surprised not to see Che Adams feature on the bench. But I don't care that we played, you know, 15 million for him in the summer. We've got players playing better than him at the moment. So yeah. I don't see a reason why he should get into the team, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I mean, if he was only getting in because of the price tag, then that's not what you deserve to get in. Like, you got to earn your spot.
Yeah, and definitely.
You really hope that we didn't just miss, you know, with that money. But if we did, we did, and we gotta learn from it. But I think he'll come good eventually. But he didn't feature today, so that's it. There was that one chance late on with Cedric and Obafemi, and maybe a more crafty striker kind of finds a way to finish that. But I'm more gonna put that on Cedric when we get there. Teaser for anybody who's listening.
100%.
But yeah, I mean, I found it a little bit odd that we chose to go with the back four for the first time in a long time away from home, against a team who was going to line up with two strikers. I found that to be a little bit odd, especially because it made us not match Arsenal's shape to start. And I think all of their fans would have been upset that they were going with a back five or a back three, at home against us. And so it was a little bit, weird for me to see that. And once again, this is a game where you don't have Oriol Romeu in there. And I'm not criticizing, the guys who were in there, cause I thought they played well, for the most part today, but I was just, you know, if you're looking at a top six team and deciding this is the match I'm going to kind of pull that true defensive midfielder out, put a more attacking midfielder in, get rid of a center back. Like, all of a sudden it just seemed like maybe counterintuitive to what I would have thought would have happened given who we were playing. And, but that said, Arsenal have been struggling as well. So, you know, maybe we go attack them. And I think overall, you know, if you just take out the last couple of minutes, I think we can be fairly happy. And I think we would have gladly taken all 3 points. And it feels right now like it's 2 points dropped, not a point gained. And that's different than I think we normally would feel going to Arsenal.
Yeah.
And we've had some close calls there in the past. It seems like, I can recall Alexis Sanchez, I think, coming off the bench and putting it across to I think take all 3 points away from us, late on.
Giroud, every season.
Yeah. It doesn't matter who he plays for, it seems like. And then also I remember back to Fraser Forster and that ridiculous game he had where he seemed to save everything. Yeah. And that was only a point, but that was a much different feeling, walking out of my buddy's house that day, having watched that. And then I see right now doing, with this one. So, anyway, we'll get to all of that, but, I don't know, like, lineups there,
it was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess I'll ask you this. Looking at that lineup, is there anybody you would have changed beforehand? Is there any one player swap you would have changed, not changing the formation or anything like that?
Pre-game, I think before the whistle blew, I mean, when I first saw it, I thought, okay, interesting. We were going with a 4-2-2 of Armstrong and Cam, or we're going with a 4-3-3 of Pierre being the holding midfielder. Initially, I thought, okay, away from home. Yeah, I know we play a lot better away from home, but why have we taken Oriol Romeu, who has probably been our best midfielder this season, out for Stuart Armstrong, who's been in and out of the side? Of course, I know Stu is a class player, and loads of fans have been calling him to play, and we saw why today. It was just a very interesting lineup to go with. I mean, in terms of the back four, I can't really fault it in the state that we're at. I would like to see Valerie being incorporated a bit more back into the lineup. Because, I mean, Cedric, ever since he's come out and said, yeah, I'm leaving in the summer, ever since he's come out and said that, his performances have been woeful, absolutely woeful. He's not looking for... if he's playing like this now and he's saying that he's prepared to leave, he's not going to get like a nice transfer. I reckon he'll just return to some Portuguese side. But I would like to see Jan come through a bit more. Obviously, there's the conversation that defensively Cedric's a bit better, yes, but yeah, what you have to remember is Valerie's only 20 years old, so he needs the experience. And we saw how well he can play last season. He was fantastic towards the end of last season. In terms of the front two, Obafemi and Ings, obviously that's a lot of pace there. I think Ings was kind of, I know he's a number nine, but he kind of played more as the number 10, if that makes sense, trying to use Obafemi's pace. Obviously, Red is, he's going to start. Prowsey's a weird one. Obviously, he scored today. It was kind of a lucky rebound, but, you know, goal's a goal. Last couple of weeks, he's been kind of scrutinized a lot by press, by fans. But what kind of surprises me is he can have a bang average game, and, you know, you'll find that neutrals in the press will just hail him as this set-piece king who deserves to play every game just because he's an academy player. And yeah, he played decent today, but I do think we need to have a look at him and think, okay, he could be playing a bit better. But obviously this is thoughts before the first whistle, before the game has even started. And I think, obviously, I think Raf got the tactics bang on today. I mean, the shape that we did go with the 4-3-3, because when they were playing three at the back, the wingers were really, really useful in terms of stretching them. You could obviously see that when they had three at the back, Luis playing on the left side did not want to come up against Obafemi in terms of Obafemi's pace. Obafemi rounded him a couple times. And then for the rest of the match, you could see that Luis backed off because obviously he's a clumsy player. But it was interesting how we integrated everyone. McCarthy, yeah, he's fine to start. He was excellent today. But, I mean, before the whistle, I saw a couple of fans, you know, thinking, you know, what's going on? Ralph, you know, he's integrated a few different interesting players there. But he's obviously seen some stuff in some people over the international break, and it worked. I mean, we played very, very well, if not the best we've played this season so far.
Yeah, I sometimes wonder if some of the guys going on an international break will miss that first game back just because you've had the chance to work with maybe a center back pairing over the course of the 10 days or whatever it is, that the guys have been around and been together. But at the same time, like, you know, Vednarak has been under Hasenhüttl. I think he started every Premier League game, and I don't think that's going to change. It was a little bit interesting to see him come over to the left so Stevens can play on the right, but. You know, I'm not gonna say anything about that. Although McCarthy did, I think, well, no, the ball took Bednarak out, and then McCarthy took Stevens out. It's like,
yeah, he punched him, didn't he?
Yeah, reminiscent of Swansea away a couple of seasons ago for Bednarak. So, anyway, so I mean, to start the match, Armstrong had to go right away, right? Like that shot was wide, but we
needed to see that.
Yeah, it pressed up. Energy, you know, taking a chance and just seeing kind of what goes on. But it seemed like through the first 7 to 10 minutes, like nobody really had a foothold. It seemed like the ball was kind of bouncing around a lot. There were a lot of, you know, clumsy kind of like people would string three or four passes together before making an errant one. It was going back the other way. And I thought the game was pretty open for the most part and fairly enjoyable to watch, just if you were just going to sit back and watch the game kind of flow back and forth. But I mean, what was the first, I guess, real moment that stood out to you in terms of the team and maybe what they were, maybe what Hasenhüttl was trying to do, or maybe some improvements over Everton, which is basically, I guess, everything, because that game was, like you said, terrible.
I mean, in terms of from the first whistle, you could see it. Obviously, Danny Ings would run through brick walls for Southampton. He loves the club so much, and yeah, we love him for that. But it was when I saw us starting to press the back three, really. We were chasing balls, trying to intercept. As you said, it was quite a slow start game. So in terms of someone getting a foothold, obviously the pace was fast, but players couldn't really string passes together. And I feel like when we first started, it was obvious that we'd worked on press. I mean, you could see, I remember when Ralph was speaking a couple of days ago, he was speaking about pressing triggers. And you could definitely see from passing forward to a long ball from Stevens or whatever, we were pressing the back three as much as we could. And that reminded me an awful lot of when we played Arsenal on our first home match last season. Mm-hmm. I remember watching the videos of Armstrong pressing against Bellerin. When we saw that again today, it was really good to see that, you know, RB Southampton may or not be, finally got that charisma back. Obviously, it's only one game. We'll see how that goes. But it was a very, very scrappy start to the game with lots of cheap fouls. Obviously, you saw Ings's yellow card, don't know why he left a leg in. But I felt like the midfielders were very eager to shoot today. Whether that was because of what happened at Man City in Prassi's goal, you know, when Armstrong shot on the greasy surface and Edison scored it. But you said about Armstrong, you know, Pierre had a go, Prowsey had a go from even the halfway line, which was strange to see. But yeah, it was a very scrappy start. I thought we looked good in terms of our shape, looked very good. We'll get onto our shape later on defensively, but overall it was a good start. We definitely started on the front foot, as you would to hope, away from home.
Yeah, yeah. I guess now the first real moment that comes up is Ings's goal. And, you know, Arsenal were appealing for, I don't know if it was a foul elsewhere, but we get the foul. Bertrand is alert enough to put the ball down, and they kept replaying it on the American feed. The ball was moving slightly as Bertrand took it. But I think that, just that couple of moments there for Bertrand to see Ings, for to play it quickly, to, and for Ings to be alert enough to just turn in. I mean, he obviously wasn't expecting it, but his reaction is fast enough or quick enough for him to turn and just run, and then, you know, get a little bit of luck to get it off the inside of the post just enough to put it into the net. But I mean, that's the type of goal that I would normally see other people score against us. And so for us to be able to turn that around and go up on Arsenal like that and take advantage of their kind of vulnerability, right? Like, that meant a lot to me. And I think that changed how I felt about how I thought the match was going to go, because I was not overly confident going into the match. Just for some reason, I didn't quite feel like we were going to be able to do it, because we hadn't been, you know, you look at what we did in Everton, it just wasn't good enough. So to see that from the team early on, I thought was a big plus. And then I was just hoping we could, you know, continue to carry on. And we didn't, to our credit, we didn't just sit back after that. We kind of kept in it and kept after it. And I thought that was good.
Yeah. I mean, the goal was a good one to see, for Bertrand to have, you know, the initiative to do that. Obviously we were lucky that Luiz was caught lacking. But I really liked Ings's confidence, because, when the ball first gets released to him, he gets his head up, he sees Obafemi, but then he also sees, I think it was Bellerin or Tierney coming in. Oh, he's obviously going to intercept that.
Yeah.
So I really like his confidence in front of goal at the moment. What is he, eight goals in seven games or something ridiculous? I think he's positive at the moment. But he is the striker we need. And he's the striker that we paid for. I mean, 20 million, we're paying for a good striker here. Yeah, I thought after the goal, we normally sit back. I mean, especially at home, we normally sit back quite deep, you know, try and do what we do against Man City and just launch balls out of our box, just intercept everything, no press at all. But we did. We kept him on the front foot. I think he could have had another one with that shot from outside the box. I think it had a little bubble, flew over the bar. But it really, you really could see us scaring Arsenal's defence. Obviously, they're not the best defensive side in the league, but they're still an established top six club. So that was really good to see. But we need to bring this energy into home games. Honestly, if we play today, like, if we play like we did today against the likes of Norwich, Watford, teams that we can really break down and exploit their weaknesses, then I think we should be fine for Christmas. I mean, we've got the squad depth in terms of forward players to do that. But I mean, yeah, it was good to see the Bertrand to do that, because it shows that he's alert. Normally we would just let Ward-Prowse swing a ball in and then no one get their head to it and it just ends up as a goal kick. But he thought, yeah, screw it, let's get Ingsy in, and it paid off.
It's just, I think my biggest worry right now is consistency. Like, we have seen us play the way we did against Everton. And I think we've seen that more often than we would have liked, even though Everton was, I think, an extreme example. We've seen then us play the way we did today for the majority of the match. I think that's actually probably the norm, is we play pretty decently for a lot of the match. And then there's just a few moments where we can't hold it together, whether it's concentration or whatever it is. And we allow other teams to, you know, the opportunity to take something back from us. So I think going forward against Watford, we just have to come out and realize, like, it's not about what they are going to do. We need to just impose ourselves on that. Same thing at Norwich, or with Norwich, and then away to Newcastle, where that seems to be a terrible place for us to go recently. So I'm hoping that, you know, we go in there and do okay there, but, we will, we will have to wait and see how that kind of unfolds. But anyway, Arsenal come back, I guess out of nowhere, kind of, and come in for their goal, right? Tierney with the cross, the shot from Aubameyang is blocked. But then Lacazette is allowed to collect the rebound and ties the game. And that's what a striker of that quality is going to do. You know, like between Aubameyang and Lacazette, you have to mark them. And Aubameyang was too open. Bertrand did enough to I think, get the block in. But then nobody's tight enough to Lacazette, and we allow him to bring the ball down and shoot. So I think because the cross came in and it went across and it's a rebound, are we now going to be critical of people not being tight enough to Lacazette, or is that too harsh on players who are kind of scrambling back and just trying to get in the way of a shot, I guess?
Well, I mean, players scrambling back, I mean, ideally, you don't have that situation. If you look at the first goal, when the ball gets played through on the inside of Cedric to Tierney, who crosses it in, if you have a look at our defensive line, we are all over the shop. Mm-hmm. You've got, I think it's Stevens trying to clear it, but he's on the edge of our six-yard box on the right corner. I'm not sure why, because there's no runners there. What that leaves is Bednarek caught with Bertrand with Bellerin behind Bednarek, and Bednarek with Aubameyang. So what that really does give you is lots of space for Lacazette to, you know, try something. Of course, Bertrand does very well with the block. But the runners coming in, I mean, obviously we need, that's why you would have two CDMs. I'm not saying we should have played that way, but that's why you would have a CDM to track the runners coming in. It's very, very similar to the goal that we conceded against them last season, their first goal. Lacazette got behind our defense way too easy, and he had so much time to bring that down and fire it. It wasn't great. If you look at Stevens' awareness, you'll see him trying to press on him, trying to get the block in, but he should have been there in the first place. Simple as that. He wasn't marking anyone. There's no need to mark the post in that situation, especially after Bertrand blocked it, so I'm not sure what he was doing. I thought overall Stevens had an okay game, but his spatial awareness wasn't good enough. He wasn't aware of who was around him. We saw that with in the second half with Pepe, when Pepe was through on goal. I think Ozil passed it to Pepe. You see Stevens side by side with Pepe. At that point, you don't go running at Ozil, because you know it's Ozil. He's going to mug you off.
Right.
And that's what he does. He just completely sprints it and takes four or five steps, sprints it in. That just allows Ozil just to curl the ball inside him. And then Pepe's in. Thank God he didn't finish. But it was... I thought Stevens just needs to step up in that department, in his defensive awareness, that's for sure.
Yeah. I think that's just one of those things where we can see, I guess for me, looking at Stevens, he came in against City and had a decent performance, had a really good performance against City.
Yeah, he played very well.
In the league game. And then, you know, he kind of, I guess, continued that. I guess he was okay, but I think that he's just fine directing traffic and kind of being the guy in the middle of a three. He's good on the ball, which I think is why you have him in that position.
So either
kind of backs to the wall, organizing, just clearing with headers or whatever, fine. On the ball with space, fine. It's that in between kind of, you know, in the scramble, in the heat of the moment, where it's just kind of instinct and reaction, it's where he's not so good. And it seems like that's where he was exposed twice. He made that mistake to come to Ozil, and Bednarek was able to get back and kind of block Pepe's cross, even though I think Pepe should have just gone forward himself. I think he probably scores there, but, you know, Bednarek is there to cover for him. So, you know, I mean, I'm guilty of making that mistake as well. I did it a bunch of times today, got yelled at a bunch, and I'm playing, you know, not professional level football by any means, but, you know, it's just one of those things where guys are going to make mistakes, and you have to just hope we kind of cover for it. Although, I think the Arsenal back center backs made plenty of mistakes as well. And Glenn Delacour will be happy that, you know, Callum Chambers only played half the match. because that's what he gets for going to Arsenal. So, anyway, I was pretty happy with how the first half went. I thought that us playing with, you know, I thought we were pressing well. I thought we were making life difficult for Arsenal. And, I think that was exactly what we would have wanted to do. I thought they looked pretty bad for a lot of it. Other than Ozil, I think watching Ozil is great because he is. I don't know. I enjoy watching Ozil. I don't care if he's playing for Arsenal or against us. I'd rather he not play against us. But
he was fantastic today. Has to be said.
I don't really have anything else in the first half, but I think
that was just a lot of bookings. It was very stop start.
Yeah,
a lot of tactical fouls. It was an interesting start. I mean, I think it was ideal for us to rattle them in the first half, and I think we did that very well. Make them uncomfortable, because obviously that's the one thing you want to do when you're playing away from home, is make the home team feel really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And we did that by going up 1-0 early, putting in all these tackles, kind of shoving them around and really going at them. So first half, I'd say probably the best we've played all season, which is weird to say that, seeing as we're mainly a second half team.
But, yeah. Well, yeah. And I mean, we go into halftime having had 10 shots, only two on target, but 10 shots. And that's us at least trying to create chances, even if we're not finishing them well. And that's, I think we'll take that, you know, plenty of tackles, plenty of breaking up their play. They only, they had 82% passing accuracy. I've seen Arsenal have a lot better than that from time to time. And I would expect more from them. But I think that goes down to us making it uncomfortable for them. And once again, we committed more fouls, but they are going to wind up with more yellow cards for one reason or another. And I think that goes down to when we're choosing to foul, when the pressing triggers that are there. And if you foul people at the right time in the right way, you kind of get away with it a little bit. And we did that. So, Arsenal made a change coming out of halftime. They pulled Chambers off, they put Pepe on, they changed their shape a little bit, and they have that 2-on-1 kind of right away, which is what we were talking about with Stevens kind of making that mistake stepping towards Ozil there. They Arsenal looked like they had a little bit of something else in coming out of halftime. But we were right back in it. You know, that interception kind of happens and we go right down the other end and Redmond's down there and forces a save from Leno. And then we go right down the other end again, and Pepe goes close again, into the ground off a bar, and Obafemi picks up it gets fouled in the aftermath, and it just seemed like we were going to go end to end and kind of, you know, be engaged, be ready, because God knows what's going to happen over the course of the next 45 minutes.
Yeah, it was a crazy start to the second half. I mean, you wouldn't expect Pepe to score that. I didn't think he had any right getting as close as he did. He did very well. The bicycle kick into the floor. I thought chances in the second half, in terms of us, I thought we had some very good chances later on. Earlier on, I thought Redmond was right to test the keeper. I thought our link-up play was nice. I thought we had good press from the midfield and upwards. I thought we were linking passes together using Danny Ings instead of more as a getting behind striker. I think we were using him more as a link-up play to bring the midfield and the wingers into it and a bit better. See him playing more of his back against the goal, which is, I mean, in terms of Ingsy, he can do both because he's strong enough to do that, and he's got the passing. We've seen how good his passing is. It's very, very good. But he's also got the pace to get him behind, so it's nice that we can use him in that way. I thought McCarthy did some very good saves. Obviously, Aubameyang had that really good opportunity. And that, for McCarthy, was a phenomenal save. Phenomenal save. I thought McCarthy had an excellent game. Really, really, really good match. He obviously had the Aubameyang save, and then he also obviously had the Willock header that he saved very comfortably. Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of defensively, again, I'll go back to Cedric. I thought he was poor once again. He just looked very beatable down that side. I thought overall link-up play was good. We were playing more as a team. Obviously, Arsenal were going to come at us in the first 10 minutes, but we held our depth really nicely, and we held our structure, which was something really good to see. We saw the defense kind of moving back a bit, getting behind the ball, but then pressing in the right moments to turn it into a 2-on-1. Obviously, you have Arsenal's 2-on-1, which you touched on. Again, Bednarek acted very well there. Arsenal should have been 2-1 up at that point, so I think we got lucky there. Game gets a lot more intense. All the way through, it was a very, very scrappy game. And then obviously we get onto the big moment of Ward-Prowse's penalty. Was it a penalty? That's up for discussion. I'd say yes, it was. Obviously, I would. But yeah, I thought he, the penalty itself was poor. Good save from Leno, but poor penalty. But he tucked it in and we're bouncing again.
I got a lot of text messages about that penalty from people here going, that's never a penalty. And then, it was pretty soft, but
yeah, it was extremely soft. Yeah.
I was actually kind of surprised. I mean, I guess it's one of those things again, where if it doesn't get called, VAR's never overturning that either way. You know, that call is going to stand, but that was off. But Tierney did impede his run. He did pull him back a little bit, and whether Ings is looking for it and drawing that, I think that goes to part of his game that he's pretty good at is,
he's very intelligent. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's what sets him apart from some of these other guys who were just super quick and kind of clumsy. You know, you look, and I don't mean to speak ill of Obafemi, but you look at him running in there like that, like he may very well trip up or get tripped, and that's never going to happen. But the way Ings does it, he gets the foul. Unfortunately for Ward-Prowse, that penalty was pretty poor.
Expect better from him.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, he tucks away the rebound.
It doesn't matter.
We'll call it good. And from there, it's I think the fans around Arsenal, they were not happy. They were not happy at all. I think they got booed off at halftime. And then they were not really even, I don't think their fans were behind them really that much. I think they were pretty upset with how things are going. And it's not just today. It's all season. I think they only have two clean sheets all season. That's not what you would expect from them. You know, nobody wants Unai Emery there, and that's okay. You know, Pochettino's open now. So, I think that would be, you know, I think all the Arsenal fans celebrated when, Mourinho went to Spurs. I have Arsenal supporting friends, and they are very happy about that, because that means he can't go to Arsenal. You know, that's it. But I thought, like you mentioned, the game being pretty scrappy. There seem to be tackles going in everywhere, and you know, from this point, it just like can we just hold out? You know, we're up 2-1. There's 20 minutes left. Can we do it? And I'm kind of looking at the shots on target or shots period here. I think we outshot Arsenal from the time that we were ahead at 2-1 to the end of the match. And that's something where you would not expect us to do that. You would expect us to sit super deep. And we didn't. We made subs that try to put Arsenal on the back foot. And we spent most of the stoppage time, most of the last 20 minutes or so in their half. And I thought that was better from our team, even though the final score doesn't bear that out.
Yeah. I mean, there's always the case of can we hold on, and the answer is always no, we can. Unless obviously the Swansea match, but it was a painful watch. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll see I was kind of freaking out, just panic tweeting constantly. I mean, after they scored, I felt the exact same today as I did when we played Everton when Mark Hughes was here in the 17-18 when Tom Davies popped up in the 90+6. That's the feeling I got. It was painful. That felt, at that point, it felt more of a loss, because obviously we missed what? Jennifer misses, Buffal misses, Jennifer misses again. We have all this possession, we have all this opportunity. Højbjerg, for some reason, goes on this crazy run and decides to shoot when he's got options left and right, and we could have taken it into the corner at this point. And you think, it's times like this where hindsight is such a great thing in football, where you just turn around and think, what if we just brought it into the corner? I think Shane and Ward-Prowse tried to do that, but it was horrible. It was a horrible feeling. And the defending was poor. It reminded me of the Walker goal, you know, the Man City, in the Man City game. Uh-huh. Reminded me of awful lot of that. 7 minutes out of time, obviously, Bednarek goes down, and then Stevens gets punched in the head, which is, you know, interesting. I was speechless. I was angry, disappointed, frustrated. But hey, we would have taken a point before the game anyway. But it's the way that we drew. We should have been 3-1, 4-1 up. And that's horrible.
Yeah, I think that's the most disappointing thing, is we had opportunities. We did the appropriate thing in that we stayed out of our own half. You know, we didn't just sit back and try to absorb pressure. We went forward, we attacked, we we created opportunities to put the game away, not just see it out, but put it away. And that's a big difference, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that that shows where it's at, but then you just see the kind of lack of, whether it's lack of confidence, whether it's lack of quality, just, you know, I think that's what hurts, because we were so close to just driving the nail, the final nail in the coffin for Arsenal. And in potentially, I think I tweeted going into the stoppage time, like, Unai Emery has 7 minutes left in his Arsenal managerial career, and I should probably delete that based on what happened. But I mean, that's really what it felt like. Arsenal didn't look like they had an answer. And for us, I think that speaks volumes, because we haven't had that yet. And you go from the first half of the Everton match, where Hasan was literally standing on the touchline yelling at people to press and we're not pressing, to jump to the last 17 minutes of this match, stoppage time included, where we are going forward and applying all the pressure, where you would expect us just to kind of hang back and be just under siege, basically. And you know, it's super disappointing, because you just, I always wonder, you know, when you do this, when you play in this manner, in this style that requires the guys to do all of this running and put forth all of this effort, and then you fall short time and time again, like, at this point, does that make the guys go like, look, we shouldn't do this, we should just sit back, because the results are the same, and it's a lot easier to just sit back and head balls and clear them, you know?
If they were to do that, the fan base would get on their backs so fast.
Yeah, well,
ridiculous.
It kind of makes me wonder if that's why Romelu wasn't in the lineup today. Like, I think he was one of the guys who they were yelling at him to press up last time, and I don't want to start rumors or anything like that, but it's just, I'm trying to put it all together. But I don't know who tweeted this or put it out there or whatever, but basically they said, it was a list of all Danny Ings' Premier League goals and the fact that we haven't won any of those matches. Well, we would have lost more of those matches had this not happened. So, or had he not scored those goals. So I'm still going to take Danny Ings in our squad each and every week. But we got quite a few questions, and we should try to move through them, because the match is there. Obviously, going forward, Watford's important. Norwich is important. We have matches to win. I guess I'll ask you this before we move on. If we play in that manner next week, if we just go out and do as we did today, will that be good enough, you think?
Oh, yeah. So if, for example, Watford, but in terms of obviously what we've seen, defensively, very, very poor. They're relying on Craig Cathcart at the back, which, you know, anyone who knows him knows it's not the best. And obviously Daryl Yanmat, yes, he's a Premier League vet, but I think if we play like that, intensity really coming at them, if we play with no pressure on our shoulders, yeah, we'll take the 3 points, I'm pretty sure. But then again, it's football. Anything can happen. But the manner, I hate to say it, but it is such a six-point match. These next matches we got coming up. I saw Carl say earlier, if we can win both these matches, we'll jump out of the bottom three very fast if we play like we did today.
Yeah.
And I can't help but agree, because the chances we created, 9 times out of 10, we put those away. It's just Cedric's probably not got half a brain to put that one on the 4-4 of the semi. So,
if
we play like that, then yeah, definitely. But that's the thing. It's a big if we have the energy. If we keep up the intensity, obviously our home form, I can't believe we haven't got a home win yet. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But let's just pray. Let's just pray we play like that. I think that's all we can do now as fans, is just pray.
Yeah.
That's all we got.
I mean, we created the opportunities today. We put ourselves in the positions, and I mean, any other two players, I think, in that position, and the ball is slid on the floor and slotted in, you know,
and
that's over. The game is over. I think Arsenal deflates after that. Everybody leaves the stadium. And
so that's a dub.
Absolutely. It's, I guess, as much as it hurts to watch that over and talk about it again, the fact that it was there for us to win is so much more than we can say about so many of the matches we've had this year, you know, where, and so we'll go with that. Not to be the bearer of bad news, but Norwich won today 2-0 in Everton. So that's fantastic.
Great.
Yeah. So
brilliant.
Onto the questions before we cry.
Let's do that.
All right. So we have some from the patrons. I put the questions out to them a little bit earlier, because one of the perks that they get is they get priority for having their questions answered on the show. So we have one from Mike Binks here. And in addition to saying congratulations for, the 150 episodes, I appreciate that, Mike. He says, we have a lot of average central defenders. Each one seems to hit a run of form from now and then, followed by a general decline. If you could keep only two of them and stick with that lineup through thick and thin, who would it be? Which two have the potential or current ability to get us out of our situation of nearly every attack resulting in a goal? He says, P.S. I have one of the Wee March On scarves that were handed out before the Everton match, if you fancy it. It's haunted by the terrible display from it. So I'm not sure. I just want to get rid of it, is what he said. So
that's what I did. Launched at the pitch.
Oh, man.
It was ridiculous.
Other than the fact that, well, see, I mean, the school I teach at is also the Saints. It's hard. But, Mike, I will get back to you on that. But if you can only pick two center backs and say, barring injury, here to the rest of the season, there are your center backs in a back four. Who would you go with from now until the end of the season?
That's a great question. Because the center backs we got are absolutely dreadful. I would say, obviously, number one, Benrek. I mean, he's not great, but you can't drop him. for me, Yoshida. I mean, just has to be. He's not, the best player. But in terms of what he does and the passion he shows, he's very good. You look at Vestergaard, he's accident prone. Yes, he's 6'6" and has a great, great hair. But, you can't expect to start in every match. Same with Stevens. I mean, he's hit form now, but let's be real, he's not a great player. I mean, you probably heard me rant about it if you listen to the full podcast. But for me, Yoshida. Obviously, we got Danso, but we've only ever seen him play once in centre-back. And he was, it was against Fulham, but he played well. I've been banging on about this. I want to see Danso play in either a back five or a back four. I just want to chuck him in just for a game and just see how he goes. Because I think he could be the key. If he's solid, he could be the key. But for me, if I had to choose one on proven record, definitely Yoshida and Benrek. Yoshida's a club man. He'd die for this club, I'm pretty sure. I love him. He loves me. Shout out to the guy tweeting Yoshida every day of a photo of him until he follows him back on Twitter. I hope that happens soon. But yeah, definitely Yoshida.
Definitely Benrek for me. And the other ones, I'm not sure. I mean, sure, like you said, Stevens hit form now, looked decent lately. But I think we've all kind of seen the best of what he can offer. And I'm not sure that's good enough. I would be content with having Yoshida on the bench every week in case something happened. So I'm going to cheat, to do this because I think I'd be willing to put out a back four of, Valerie, Bednarak, Danzo, and Bertrand the rest of the season, I think, and just let it happen. And although I'm not sure, because we haven't seen Danzo do it enough, Vestergaard also looked really good in the Bundesliga. Danzo looked decent in the Bundesliga. So you don't really know, if it translates, right? So I just based on his age, and that's a center back pairing we could have for several years to come if we keep it all together. So I think for that reason alone, I just say go with it and just let them develop together, let them learn. And I think that way you have Benrak on the right, Danzo on the left, and you just go with it. I think that's what I would do if I could have Yoshida on the bench for an injury. So that would be
ideal.
Yeah. Christian Candler asks on Twitter, why can't we hold on to Leeds?
That's a question we've been asking for a long time, mate. I don't think I can answer that.
it's super hard I'll just go back to what I said earlier. I'm super happy that we lost it going forward versus sitting back and just trying to absorb pressure where the inevitable is coming, because if we convert one of those two or three big chances we had at the end, then the game is over, and I would have taken. I think it would have felt so much better. I think to, I don't know. I guess just the sense of relief you get if you hold on to a lead like that versus the
confidence,
the absolute joy you have when you just go and take it from someone like that, when you just drive the ball into the net for the third or fourth goal and you just and everybody kind of knows, you know, I think that's a completely different feeling than just the relief and exhale and, you know, can we do it again? Whereas I think if we keep creating chances like that, they will go in. And so that's where I'll go with that. I don't know if that answers the question, but that's what we're doing.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of holding on to leads, it's a very difficult arm form. I mean, as Matt said, you know, it's good to go forward and press, and deservedly we should have won the game, but it's all about mentality and character. If we can actually hold on, keep our heads, got to keep your composure at the back, keep the ball as much as you can. I think we didn't keep the ball as much. We could have kept it away from their players a bit more. But it's, yeah, for me, that question can't be answered in just a simple sentence. There's so much stuff going into it. But it was a good question. But let's hope we learn how to hold on for leads soon. It's ridiculous how many points we dropped.
Yeah. All right, let's jump down to the Patreon Discord channel. Kevin McGee says, as a Christmas present, you're given any transfer you want. Who would you pick? His 10-year-old son, Sam, is desperate for Mane. He says VVD. Who would you bring in? Past player, new player, who would you have in?
Any transfer. Obviously, don't say like, oh, I want Messi. That's just dumb. For me, I'd actually take Mane back. I think Sam's spot on with that. Liverpool's top goal scorer, you see the quality he's got. I think he's up there top five best players of the world. Without a doubt, for me, Sadio Mane, especially at the moment on current form, I'd probably take him back. Obviously, that's stupid because we do need a centre half. And if you're looking at centre halves, then you look at Van Dijk. Overall, yeah, I'd probably just take Mane just for pure laughs and fun and whatnot. But realistically, we need a centre back. So maybe someone like Nacho Fernandez is a good centre back for Madrid. Yeah, probably Mane.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I have a hard time like with the imagined players coming in. My wife yells at me all the time, like, I don't let the kids have any fun. It's just like, well, that's not happening, so why are we talking about it? But yeah, I think if you bring back either one of those, they improve the team. I mean, they're just really good players, and they are good at their positions, and they would improve all aspects of our team. But I don't want Adam Lallana, so that's what I'll go with.
No, Adam Lallana can stay where he is.
That's like a lump of coal in your stocking, I think. maybe that's being harsh, but I don't care. Rob says, do you think there's a realistic chance of Saints staying up? If so, what do you think needs to change for it to happen? So, I have been kind of on the brink of saying this is it. Like, maybe we've tested it too many times, and then this is the one that's going to catch us.
If we don't pick up wins against Norwich, Watford, the game, Newcastle, the game's coming up. If we're not out of the bottom three by New Year, for me, we're done. We are done. We are gone. We are, you know, we are just relegated. And I'm kind of prepared because I thought it was going to happen last season. I thought it was going to happen 17-18. I thought it was going to happen then. I'm prepared for us to go down. But there's people throwing stuff around on Twitter. Oh yeah, let's get relegated. You know, it'll be a good chance to rebuild. No. It would be the worst thing. Half our players would leave. They're on ridiculous wages. We wouldn't get as much income coming into the club like we do in the Premier League. Everything from broadcasting rights to the actual position places that the Premier League give us for finishing in those places. Mm-hmm. Ralph would leave. Half his backroom staff would go. It would be abysmal and probably more chaotic than it is now. But in terms of us staying up, we need points. And you say what would need to change for it to happen? We need to pick up points. It's that simple. I don't care how we get them. We need points. We're still on two wins. I hope that to be five by New Year's, but I highly doubt it.
Yeah.
I don't care. We just need wins. That's what we need.
Yeah, we're gonna have to find a way to get them, and it's, you know, I don't know. Like you said, it doesn't really matter how it happens; it just needs to happen. And you kind of touched on it there, but Justin Woodward, another one of the patrons, says, "Would relegation be a good thing to clear out the deadwood like Newcastle, or do you think it would go horribly wrong like Sunderland? Which of those two situations do you see is more likely if we go down?"
Sunderland. I hate to be a pessimist, but it's true. Definitely Sunderland, because we've got we've got players who we signed when we were in 16-17 season, 17-18, and we were like, you know, around the mid-table mark. And you can see that reflect in the wages that we pay for players. I think we'd do a Sunderland. Sunderland and Stoke. Yeah, we'd flop. And it would be, I don't see Sunderland getting anywhere near the Premier League anytime soon. I don't think we have the character that Newcastle have in terms of not only the fan base, but in terms of the funds that they do have coming into the club. Yeah, I know Mike Ashley's a bit tight, but he's there when you need him. He's actually, you know, I'm sure we'll speak about the owner later, but yeah.
Yeah.
We're
getting there. Kevin also asked, he says, I have $100 in my pocket. Will that be enough money for him to have a pint and a bite to eat at the Emirates today? Everybody laughed and said no. But then he said he managed to find a four pound beer. So I don't know.
You serious?
Yeah. So he's going to have to tell us where that happened.
Yeah, you got to send me a link to that pub.
Yeah. So good for him. I don't know if he ate though. He probably's starving. but anyway, and also Kevin, you probably shouldn't tell a bunch of people you got $100, 100 pounds laying around.
Yeah. Yeah, watch out, mate.
anyway, we have some questions from Instagram. You see any there you would like to answer? We have one about our opinion on the rumored RB Southampton. I guess.
Yeah. Oh my God.
We talk about it a little bit, but
yeah.
I guess I will say that there's one question here. It says, why doesn't the club bring any quality first team coaches to help Ralph? I talked about that last week with Carl. I think that's the most insight we're going to get.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be able to touch any more than Carl did on that.
So check that one out. I think that'll do it. Danny Ings, I think we're both pretty high on him in terms of how he's been playing.
He's all right, isn't he? It's not too bad. Definitely not, but he's all right. Yeah.
And then what's your opinion about RB Southampton? And I don't know where this came from, but it seems to be showing up. And I think I tend not to like want to give airtime to just to blatant rumor, but I think this just boils down to, you know, we've been linked with Aaron Long. We have, you know, sent Josh Sims on loan to New York. We have coaches who have been associated with the RB brand, and you know, we don't like the owner. So all of those things put together, you start making the connection, right? Like
I
don't.
I think it's crazy. I don't know who came up with this, but would I be down for it? Would I? What's my opinion on it? I mean, in terms of changing our name, RB Southampton, I'm not too sure. Obviously, it would mean more funds into the club, a well-known brand. In terms of our style of play, we already play like an RB club. We try to play like an RB club. We press high. We try and win the ball back in high areas, and we try and score as many as we can, which is obviously what Leipzig do. In terms of Aaron Long, I read a bit about him. I don't think an MLS player is what we need right now, but for $4 million, you can't really complain. In terms of that whole situation, obviously, if you follow me on Twitter, you'll see I am very Zhao out, 100%. I don't think you can be a Saints fan and not be Zhao out. I think he's the worst thing to happen to the club in a very long time. But yeah, if I'm honest, I'd be open to it. I think, why not just become an RB club? It would lead us to more links in terms of players we can bring in terms of pressing styles, and it will give us more of a brand. I think the only thing that RB wouldn't like about it is that Monster are our official energy suppliers or something, official drink supplier.
That is a change.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, for me, I think that I'm not the most well-versed in, I guess, the Bundesliga or what happened, but I know people aren't happy with how that club kind of came out of nowhere. Is they just
money?
Yeah, and you take a club that doesn't belong and you pump a bunch of money into it and make it something that it's kind of, you know, I guess people are upset with that, and not just because it's the money, but because of the way they went about it, I think. But
definitely.
But that said, like, you look at, I guess, what America has built on, and you know, you take something and you pump a bunch of money into it and you make it good. Like, that's what that. So like, I have a lot of people who would be sitting if I kind of just showed them the story of Red Bull as a, or RB, because they can't be Red Bull in the Bundesliga. But if I showed them that, they would mostly be okay with how it happened. Take just from a business perspective, you know, from a football kind of fan culture perspective, I totally understand that it's tainted goods. And I saw Chris Rann earlier point out that, you know, he wouldn't want that he'd take relegation kind of, I think, over being associated with that. So
statement. Yeah, that's a very big statement. I mean, obviously, I'm all for someone coming into the club and pumping money in. I'm all for that. 100% all for that. In terms of the ethics, obviously you want it to be, you know, good. You don't want anything dodgy going around, because that would just bring shame to the club. But in terms of the whole owner situation, apparently Zhao's been trying to sell us for the last 6 months. I haven't heard of anything about that since it got leaked, but just get him out. If RB come in now, then it's clean money that they're putting into the club. I'm all for it. But yeah, I don't think there's enough out there for it to be legit. I mean, there's a few rumors, and I think Twitter's just absolutely ran with it.
Yeah.
And got too overhyped. Yeah. I don't see it happening. I can see there was a guy I read the other day on Twitter. But before Zhao came in, there was a businessman from Southampton who was interested in buying the club, who's an actual Saints fan. I can't remember his name. But he might be interested again, I'm not sure. But that would be fantastic if we had a homegrown owner instead of a Chinese man who doesn't even say anything about the club. But yeah, just if you want to see more Zhao out propaganda, go follow me on Twitter. They'll be posting a lot of it, that's for sure. Yes, I think that's the overall opinion.
Yeah, and this kind of brings me to the last thing that I want to kind of bring up here is that, I mean, if we're looking for someone to keep the club honest, because the club doesn't respond to us on Twitter, they're not answering my questions, you know, or I think anybody that emails them with questions about ownership or the club or anything, and you can see the occasional fan forums that happen. The guy. That for the most part, I think, provides us with the most insight to the club through written, media is Adam Leach. And he's gone now. I mean, this was his, Arsenal was his last match. And I think
a big, big bummer.
Yeah. I think super happy for him to be able to move on in his career and take on a new challenge and a new position elsewhere. But I think the more gutting than the Arsenal draw in the drop points is the fact that the guy who I think has done the best job of holding Saints up and making them answer the tough questions, even as much as he can. He can't do it all the time, but I think that we are going to suffer going forward because of that. I think that
100%.
That especially given there are rumors now about potentially the sale of the club and things like that, and Adam was always very forthcoming in saying like he's not interested in being the first one to tweet it or anything else, but the information he's going to get is going to be right, and he can't publish everything all the time. But I severely hope that whoever comes in to replace him, if the Daily Echo chooses to replace him, that they can pick up the slack quickly, because I think that, you know, you and I were talking earlier, we subscribe to The Athletic. We pay to read what Carl does, but Carl's new to the job. The Athletic doesn't have a relationship with the club the way the Echo does, and so it's going to take Carl a while to kind of earn that trust and be in there and stuff like that. So I am supremely worried about what the club is going to be able to do now, because essentially they are going to be choosing what stories get out through the Telegraph for the most part, and that is not what I want. I want somebody publishing quite frequently and being able to ask the tough questions, hold them accountable, especially given that the owner doesn't speak, that we don't. And I think that's typical of football owners in general, but just the idea that they're going to be able to just kind of decide on their own what goes out and what doesn't, through written pieces each and every week is, I think, a huge blow.
It's a real big shame. I mean, personally, Adam, thank you. Everything you've done in terms of getting the truth out, you've been fantastic. And Matt's right, we are going to miss that an awful lot, especially in the turmoil we're in at the moment. It's a shame, because as you said, Matt, for the club to be able to choose what they bring out instead of stuff getting leaked or someone actually pressing the questions, it's going to be a very tough time for Saints fans. And I can see our fan base getting a lot more toxic and a lot more agitated towards hire staff members of the club as well, which obviously in turn won't help because of the lack of communication. It's just modern day football now. That's all it is. You can't wait outside an owner's or a manager's house anymore and demand for, you know, the goings on at the club. You can't track down players. I have a friend who works for a family friend who works for Bristol. Can't remember which newspaper it is now, but it's one of the Bristol newspapers, which is a nearby city, and he covers Bristol City and Bristol Rovers. And he's a journalist. He writes for both those clubs. And he said, mainly it's the agents that leak stuff.
Yeah.
But obviously, who are they going to link it to now? You know, or what's going to happen with that? It is going to be a very scary time because we're not going to have the same. Yeah, Carl's there and he's doing a fantastic job. But he hasn't been in the game for that long. It's going to be very, very hard for fans to not hear about what's going on. The truth as well. There's going to be a lot of stuff, especially around owners. You know what? People are just looking for some cheap views on their newspaper. It's going to be very, very difficult for us. But we just got to take everything with a pinch of salt until it's released officially by the club or by the Athletic or a trusted news source.
And sometimes I think that people just think, well, it's just, you know, it's just sports journalism. Like, it's not the same. But journalism plays a huge role in how societies work and how democracies run and things like that. And you look around the world at places that get to control the media that comes in or out. And I don't want to live there. I don't want to be a part of that. And
no, definitely not.
And I don't want my football club to be that way either. So, that said, I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's going to have very little bearing on what the Southern Daily Echo do. They're in a tough spot as a regional newspaper or local newspaper. That's been an industry that's been under siege for some time. So they hopefully whoever is there will do the best job they can, and that's all we can ask. But we're going to need someone to hold the club accountable, and whether that's us and as fans and how we do that, because I mean, there's a lot of fan podcasts and things like that, but. Ultimately, you know, we're all feeding off of what the club is willing to release, and it's all how we interpret it and everything else. So we'll just have to wait and see. But I mean, I think we've done it. I think this, unless you have something else you want to add, or do you have any kind of closing thoughts or anything like that?
So closing thoughts. If we don't pick up points soon, we're in trouble. big trouble. I don't care if anyone's listening to this, like in terms of players, if people know players, tell them we don't care how you do it. We don't care. Just get the points.
Yeah.
Just do it. Just put everything into it, because that's all we can ask. Is if we put 100% into this, like we did at the second half of last season, we'll be fine. If we don't get points in our upcoming games, and I mean a good amount, not a few draws, we're talking 9 points, 12 points before the new year. We're ball bagged. We are. Yeah. We're yesterday's news. We're relegated, no doubt.
Yeah. Well, hopefully by Christmas time, we're having a slightly more positive conversation.
Let's hope so, definitely.
But Rob, it's been a pleasure to have you on. I think.
Thank you very much.
Is this number three for you?
Number three, I think. Yeah, hat trick.
So, well, thanks for being part of the show for as long as you have been and coming on and. I appreciate it. And like I said before, like the number of episodes doesn't happen unless people come on and are willing to share their time. And, you know, you're keeping a late night for me to be able to record this now. So I appreciate that.
No problem at all. Yeah. Anytime. Just give me a shout. But, on behalf of the Silent community, thank you for running the podcast. It's a really good outlet for people to share their views. And it's a really good listen as well. Okay. To have people inside the club, outside the club, fans in general, to come on the show, it gives us a really good chance. But yeah, congratulations on your 150th episode as well.
I appreciate that very much, Rob. Thank you.
No problem.
And that does it for this episode of the Southampton Delivery Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope you've enjoyed it. Special thanks this week goes out to Rob Maddox. You can find him on Twitter at @JamesLordProwse and on Instagram at @RobMaddox_. Thank you so much for joining the show. And Tom, I want to apologize again for double booking the show. I can't believe I made that mistake, but I hope you understand. We'll get you on the show soon. I still feel terrible, and this is several days later. If you want to follow this show on social media and get in touch and let us know what you think, you can do that. We are at @SFCDELL_IVERY on both Twitter and Instagram. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/SFC Delivery. There is no underscore in the Facebook address. You want to follow the show and listen and subscribe so you don't miss future episodes? You can do that on iTunes, Stitcher, Acast, Google Play, TuneIn Radio, or wherever you listen to podcasts. There are a bunch of links and other things over at southamptondelivery.com, the website that has links to all of that stuff, and where you can sign up for the newsletter that comes out each and every Friday. The show would not be possible without you as a listener, without the guests that we have on, without the patrons of the show. And I just want to say thanks again to all of them. Once again, be on the lookout for a new episode coming to you later this week ahead of our match against Watford. Very much looking forward to doing that here in the next couple of hours. The logo for the show is designed by Matt Beeling of the We Are Southampton page on Instagram. And the partner page of the show is the Southampton page on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, who you should follow for all of your Southampton FC news and needs. Music for the show comes courtesy of the Free Music Archive at freemusicarchive.org. The intro song is Epic Song by Boxcat Games, and the end of show credits that you're listening to right now is Aim Is True by Poddington Bear. We will be back next week with another show. We will continue this trend as we work towards the Christmas period and hopefully start picking up some points. Once again, thank you so much for listening. It really does mean a lot. And I look forward to the next 50 or 150 or 100 episodes until my wife says no more. So anyway, thanks so much for listening. I really do appreciate it. We'll talk to you next time. But until then, remember that together, march on.
Jack, try to keep it down. Can you hear him?
Just a tiny bit, yeah.
150 out the door. In the garbage already.